DW Africa Link. The time in our studios is 5 p.m. A warm welcome to today's Africa Link program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Assumpta Datus. Just to remind you, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
That's right, indeed, Assumpta. On the show today, rescue workers in Mozambique fear that thousands more may have fallen victim to floods. And this is what the mayor of Beira told DW.
Our telecommunications have failed and we have a very severe water shortage. In addition, some marketeers are speculating on food prices.
Three teenage schoolgirls in Burundi have been sent to prison to await trial for scribbling on a picture of President Pierre Nkurunziza in textbooks. We hear from our correspondent.
Many civil society groups, as well as citizens, they are saying that scribbling into the textbooks should not be taken as a big offense.
British Prime Minister Theresa May is making a last-ditch attempt to buy more time and delay Brexit. So, is the country hurtling towards a no-deal exit?
To know more about this story, stay with us till the end. But first, news in brief.
DW News.
This is DW News with me, Jean Nyingi. EU leaders are meeting in Brussels for a summit where they are expected to agree to delay Brexit until June 30th. Britain is currently scheduled to leave the European Union next Friday, but Prime Minister Theresa May is asking for more time for a fresh attempt to get Parliament to back her withdrawal deal after it rejected twice.
What is important is that Parliament delivers on the result of the referendum and that we deliver Brexit for the British people. I sincerely hope that we can do that with a deal. I'm still working on ensuring that Parliament can agree a deal so that we can leave in an orderly way. What matters is that we recognise that Brexit is the decision of the British people. We need to deliver on that. We're nearly 3 years on from the original vote.
Today's decision is likely to come with strings attached. EU leaders are saying that Theresa May has to get a Brexit agreement through the British Parliament first, or there will be no extension. A week after Cyclone Idai hit coastal Mozambique and swept across the country to Zimbabwe, the storm's aftermath of flooding, destruction and death continues in southern Africa. World Food Programme senior spokesperson Hav Wessel says more than 1.7 million people have been affected by the cyclone. He added that in Mozambique alone, over 600,000 have been affected, and this number is expected to go up.
The problem that we have is more the access. Then we can have the food coming, but then we have a problem of distribution of that food to people, because most of the people are basically on a rooftop or in a place where we cannot access by road. It's very difficult to reach the people and to know what's happening.
More than 200 people have so far been confirmed dead, and thousands more still need to be rescued. Three teenage girls have been sent to prison in Burundi for defacing a picture of President Pierre Nkurunziza in their school books. If found guilty, the girls, who are all under age of 18, could face up to 5 years in prison. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. At least 70 people have died after an overcrowded ferry capsized on the Tigris River near the Iraqi city of Mosul. Most of the casualties were women and children who couldn't swim. Rescue operations are underway. The ferry is believed to be carrying around 150 people when it capsized. Now to your sports, where defending champions Cameroon are among 21 countries hoping to fill one of the 10 places up for grabs this weekend in the final 2019 Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers. The Indomitable Lions will be among the 24 finalists in Egypt this June, provided they avoid defeat at home against Comoros in Yaounde. Other hopefuls include South Africa, Burundi, the Gambia, Lesotho and Comoros that are fighting hard to qualify for the first time. For more news and information, head on to our Facebook page, DW Africa. My name is Jean Nyingi.
And you're still listening to Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Assumpta Latos. Welcome all of you listening to us through our Facebook page. I could see Omal Boateng, Yukubu, you're saying good afternoon. Good afternoon back. Ignatius, you're saying you're watching from the UAE. And Monju Irineos, you're saying hello.
Now, to begin with, a tropical cyclone that ravaged three southern African countries last week has killed at least 350 people, affected more than 1.7 million others, and left 15,000 people still stranded by floods. That's according to estimates this Thursday. As the toll surged from the region's biggest storm in years, WHO announced plans to tackle an emerging threat to survivors from malaria and cholera. Assumpta.
In Mozambique, Cyclone Idai smashed into the coast of central region, unleashing hurricane-force winds and rains that flooded the hinterland and drenched eastern Zimbabwe. DW's Nadia Isufu spoke to the mayor of the city of Beira, David Simango. He started by describing the situation and how the country's infrastructure, especially the roads that have been blocked.
Our telecommunications have failed and we have a very severe water shortage. In addition, some marketeers are speculating on food prices. Beira is in the dark and has become a ghost town at night. This is extremely painful. We lack food for the population and we do everything we can to open the streets because fallen trees have blocked almost all streets in the city of Beira. Many power poles have also fallen. It is a great challenge to recover and try to return to normalcy.
Speaking about the needs of the people after the cyclone hit the city, the mayor said the most urgent thing that the people needed was food and shelter.
The people are homeless and they need sheet metal to repair the roofs of their houses. They need water, but they also need clothes because many people's clothes are wet or washed away. These are the big challenges. Then there are many people, especially the elderly and orphan children, who are homeless and have nowhere to sleep.
Simango also said if waterborne diseases break out, hospitals will have a hard time to cope with.
The hospitals can hardly handle this because they have no electricity. Many of the tests and many medical examinations that require electricity are not being carried out because the Beira Central Hospital, which is in the main hospital in the region, does not have electricity and therefore cannot diagnose. There are many patients dying and there are patients returning home because they cannot be diagnosed due to the lack of electricity.
That was the mayor of Beira, David Simango. Now we return to the story that's dominating the political agenda here in Europe, and that's Brexit. British Prime Minister Theresa May is in Brussels on a mission to delay the UK's departure from the European Union. She is scrambling to avoid a no-deal exit, and EU leaders are meeting also in Brussels for a summit where they are expected to agree to postpone Brexit.
But today's decision comes with strings attached. Other EU leaders are saying May has to get a Brexit agreement through a parliament, and the deal's off with Prime Minister Theresa May on a mission to delay. Let's gauge the mood in Brussels with our George Matches, who is at all important summit.
The European Union is, of course, still keen, and they've always made that clear. They do want an orderly Brexit. They do want a deal. But the message that Theresa May has received today from leaders from the 27 European countries here arriving here basically is that they're putting up the pressure. The message for Theresa May is take the deal, get an extension, and pass that deal through the House of Commons, or it'll be a cliff-edge Brexit. That pretty much is the message that the French president has said. So you have really signs here that a Brexit fatigue has reached its peak.
DW's Georg Matthes in Brussels. Now, the German Chancellor Angela Merkel in the Bundestag this morning before she left for Brussels outlined her position on Brexit.
It is my firm conviction that we need to have a structured withdrawal of Britain from the EU. It's not just in the interest of Britain itself, which of course many there believe as well, but it's also very much in the interest of Germany and the interest of the 27 other member states of the EU. And I believe the key problem there has to do with the whole question of Ireland.
Letztendlich zu tun hat mit der Irlandfrage.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel speaking earlier today in Germany's parliament, the Bundestag. Now, three teenage schoolgirls in Burundi have been sent to prison to await trial for scribbling on a picture of President Pierre Nkurunziza in textbooks. The girls, aged 15, 16 and 17, face up to 5 years in prison for insulting the head of state if found guilty.
And of course, the judges said the three girls should be prosecuted for contempt of the head of state and ordered them to a juvenile section of a prison in the north of Burundi at Ngozi to await trial. Now, before we came on air, I spoke to our correspondent in Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niora, and I started by asking him how serious the charges are.
These charges might be very serious because if the administration gets involved in the justice case, this might be very serious. We also had a similar case. It was in 2016, right after Nkurunziza won the controversial third term. The same case happened in several schools, in several provinces, whereby school children were accused of scribbling the photo of President Pierre Nkurunziza. Some were arrested, others taken into prison. The example is what happened in the province of Muramvya, where school children were pardoned. They were pardoned and released, but many of them were prosecuted by the Burundian judiciary.
The teachers pointed out that the books are shared among all the peoples as they are not enough for everyone to have their own. What are people saying about this case?
People are saying that it might be injustice to arrest or to imprison the three girls because a textbook can be shared by three or four or six pupils. So it's difficult to identify who really scribbled in the textbook. So a child of an opposition father might be imprisoned for the only reason that the pupil is a child of an influential opposition member.
Now, shouldn't authorities focus on holding perpetrators of serious rights violations to account instead of jailing school children just for drawings?
Well, many civil society groups, as well as citizens, they are saying that scribbling into the textbooks should not be taken as a big offense that can be penalized by the penal code. But they say that this should be a case dealt by what we call school rules, internal school rules, whereby some marks can be withdrawn from the pupil instead of taking the children into jail.
I was speaking to Apollinaire Niora in the capital, Bujumbura. Now, Assumpta, this story, it's a sad one, and it's an unfortunate story. It's not the first time that we do it.
Yeah.
3 years ago, again, some three girls were jailed for drawing, tampering with the president's, picture that is always on the front of the books.
So I have to be careful when I have your picture on my book.
Perhaps they put a French cat on his head. But we have some comments here.
Yeah.
Because our users are not really happy at all with the government's move to jail these girls just for drawings. They think, the government has to deal with more serious issues.
Now, Eta Mayor, you're saying this is useless government.
Itoro Orok says, for just defacing a picture, seems like a struggle to earn respect.
And Yekolo Bega, you're saying some governments don't have serious issues to deal with. You can just imagine. Yeah.
Now, one of our usual contributors, Wanum Talaba, says, and why was Nkurunziza's face on the book? He's wondering, same question I have here. Some people are really sick of attention.
And Garland Kinks, you're saying, and these old policemen are foolish themselves thinking that they are working. That's your opinion.
He's talking about the picture that is on our Facebook page about this particular story. Ben Porter says, this is why they left the International Criminal Court to abuse the defenseless.
Now, Siayu Yang, you're saying, I hope he is not going to use them as a side what, chicks? Prison is, this is not really a comment that I can read here.
Shadrach Sakarika says, tell him to step down instead of creating unemployment. You want to be newsmakers, leave children alone. You can continue the debate on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Welcome back to Africa Link, broadcasting live from Bonn, Germany. And today it's me, Assumpta Latus.
And me, of course, Isaac Mugabe here. Still to come, Liberian journalists are enjoying the freedom of writing and speaking after President George Weah has repealed some media provisions that have in the past put journalists in trouble.
Those days were so terrible. There were times you produce a paper and you stay home because you were afraid that the authorities will come after you.
So stay tuned for that story and more. But first to Cameroon. The English-speaking region there has been in crisis for more than 2 years now, and there are no indications that the crisis will be over soon. The fighting, killings, burning and looting has actually been intensifying. But those atrocities have also created general awareness in the French-speaking regions.
Now, in this region, which is supposed to be bilingual, English speakers were greatly marginalized. But this is changing now as many holders of public offices make an attempt to speak the English language. Mokinzeka has been listening to French-speaking ministers, lawmakers and directors general as they struggle to speak a language they once neglected.
Bon après-midi, madame, monsieur.
This is the signature tune of Cameroon's state radio CRTV News, with its primetime 5 p.m. presenter Madeleine Sopikoto announcing a new dawn for English-speaking Cameroonians. She says the news will now be presented in English and in French.
En anglais et en français sur votre radio.
The central director for CRTV Radio, Alain Belibi, says the change was effected because most important state decisions were not read in the English language.
Le contenu de ce journal
avec... During this news, decisions that had to do with life of the state were always read, and so the public asked that we should increase our audience by integrating our English-speaking compatriots.
State radio and TV are just part of government structures that are allowing for more usage of the English language. Recently, the Speaker of Cameroon's National Assembly, Kavai Yege Jibril, addressed Parliament in English.
I am very pleased and greatly honored to welcome you here today on this historical and significant day of number 6, which also marks the 36th anniversary of your very first swearing in an association, ascension into office as President of the Republic of Cameroon.
The efforts to integrate English into public life started when President Paul Biya created a commission for bilingualism and multiculturalism as a solution to the marginalization cries from English speakers. Peter Mafani Musonge is its president.
Some of the things we did included visit to state institutions, the Supreme Court, the Senate, the National Assembly, the Prime Minister's office, and so on. We went to see the practice of bilingualism in those ministries because we want to see how they are all implementing the constitutional provisions on bilingualism.
Biya said he created the Bilingualism Commission as part of a solution to the Anglophone crisis. But Ngale Daniel, a lawmaker from the Anglophone region, says if officials only speak the two languages, yet neglect Anglophones as they have done in the past, the crisis that have displaced 500,000 people will not be over.
The ghost towns are still there, the school boycotts are still. In fact, the situation is instead degenerating. If you look critically, all that the government has done, the other side has not made any attempt to show that they are interested in a dialogue.
Anglophones had complained that each time they spoke in the English language to Francophones, they received as reply, Je ne connais pas votre anglais là, meaning I do not know that you are English. The Constitution of Cameroon has English and French as equal official languages.
That was Moki Kinzeka reporting about that problem of speaking another language.
English and French, bilingualism, etc. I think I'm starting to admire your country, Tanzania, where Swahili is the official language and the national language, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. I mean, like everywhere you go, you can speak Kiswahili and everybody understands you.
Exactly. It baffles me when a country, you know, starts, you know, Bolivia gets around or fighting over a language that doesn't belong to them. Yeah. In Rwanda, Kenya, Rwanda, where I come from, is the national language and can be also official. But the two other languages, like the French, English, you can use any of them or write your letter in our national language.
Okay, you can still write us some comments on our Facebook page and keep the debate going.
U-Zone.
Now, the average percentage of women in science research in Africa is about 34.5. Did you know that, Isaac?
No, I didn't.
Okay, in Uganda, however, the Ministry of Education wants to change this and is seeking to eliminate all gender disparities in education and encourage more girls to take science subjects.
And that's why it has made it compulsory for all students in secondary schools to study science. But biases remain in families, schools and workplaces against female students in science and technology. Frank Iger has more details.
I am at Makerere University's College of Engineering, Design, Art and Technology, and here I meet 19-year-old Hidaya Nassali, a student of mechanical engineering. She is busy fixing a vehicle engine at the garage, and she tells me her passion for machines and automotives drove her into taking science at the university.
We mined a lot of public opinion. That is the biggest disadvantage. How will people see me wearing an overall and getting under the car? Yet this is what we do. This is what is going to move the world. Boys are quite intimidated. At some point, they actually can't believe a girl is leading them. I mean, it's a girl. 50 boys, we just have to believe in ourselves and have confidence that we can do what boys do. This is what we usually lack.
According to John Baptist Chirabida, the head of mechanical engineering department, Hidaya is the best student in a class of 50 boys. He says her track record in science is evidence that science cuts across gender.
They have overgrown the perception that mechanical engineering is masculine, not feminine, as traditionally believed by our people around. So they excel because they know what they are doing as something promising.
Hidaya is not the only girl who has interest in science. 17-year-old Natasha Kahunde is a student at Crested Secondary School in the capital, Kampala. She says she strongly believes she is the medical doctor in the making because of her interest in science, and nothing will stop her pushing her dream.
I do biology, chemistry, and agriculture. I love sciences, not because I just want to show off, but I have the ability to do them. I had a dream of becoming a doctor, and I realized that to become that, I had to concentrate on the sciences. You know, sciences are mostly taken by boys, but I'm a girl. I'm driven by my capability, and I know I can.
But Hope Muhumuza, the deputy principal, says they are aware of the low enrollment and performance of girls in science compared to boys. It is from this backdrop that they initiated mechanisms to attract more girls into these subjects by offering half tuition and constant monitoring.
When they reach here at school, we are able to do career guidance, and we encourage them to know that they are able, what these boys can do in sciences, the girls can also do. They've been able to overcome that fear. They are motivated, and right now they are competing favorably.
According to statistics for national examinations, there is improvement in the performance over the years of girls doing sciences compared to previous years. Of the 98,524 candidates who sat for advanced level exams, the failure rate among females was lower at 0.8% than males at 1.8%. Tony Lusambu, the commissioner in the Ministry of Education, says it is collective responsibility to ensure gender balance in science subjects.
That was Frank Yeager reporting from Kampala. Now, we did post this on our Facebook page also, and we did ask a question. So what more can our communities do to encourage girls to pursue science? Mon Kroma, you're saying that from my own little observation in our society, the paradigm is changing. If you compare the last 10 years and the previous, you will get to understand that more girls are now into science than the previous 10 years. Families should then give their girls' children more opportunities for learning and let child marriage be abolished.
Now, Assumpta, I think, you know, women, girls should be encouraged to sciences because one of the greatest female scientists, her name was Marie Curie. She was Polish and French naturalized. Actually, there's a street named after her here in Germany, in Brusselsberg. Mm-hmm. And she was the first woman to win the Nobel Prize. And she won it twice mm-hmm. in physics and chemistry. Mm-hmm. A second one is Rosalind Franklin. She was English and also made great contributions into our understanding of DNA. And she was also a chemist.
Not only that, because science actually, did you know that in 2015, 90% of the jobs will be through science and technology.
Exactly. And I hope the girls can, you know, embrace that chance.
Yeah.
Speaking out.
Let's now talk about press freedom. Liberian journalists are showing a sign of relief after President George Weah signed into law a bill discriminating libel by amending sections of criminal code.
The section was used to punish speech offences with jail terms. The laws protected the president, judiciary and legislative authorities from criticism. Evelyn Pade has been finding out what the new changes mean for press freedom in Liberia. Take a listen.
Journalists here at the Inquirer newspaper, a Monrovia-based media house, are busy working on their stories. The publisher, Philip Wiese, is editing the weekend magazines. Like the rest of the media fraternity here, Wiese is happy that President George Weah's government has repealed some of the media provisions that have in the past put journalists in trouble. He was once a victim of the law.
Those days were so terrible. There were times you produce a paper and you stay home because you were afraid that the authorities will come after you because of a critical publication.
Criticizing a head of state would direct the journalists and government opponents to criminal courts. Now, this problem is said to be over after the country officially decriminalized defamation laws, a big sign of relief for journalists like Wiese.
It's not just the removal, but also psychologically, the decriminalization of these laws, it will help to build the minds of journalists and also the issue of free speech that people can speak out without fear that if I say this, the authorities will come after me. A lot of people have suffered this. There have been a lot of sacrifices to reach to where we are today.
The Press Union of Liberia, an umbrella group which advocates for the rights and protection of journalists in Liberia, say the repealing of the libel law against the president is a step in the right direction. Charles Coffey is the president of the union.
We have made significant progress as it relates to press freedom because the president cannot use a criminal libel against the president to go to court because that libel against the president, criminal libel, was very powerful. We were very repressive. Those were the authority the presidents were using to suppress the media. Criminal malevolence also been repealed. So we made a significant step forward. Journalists would not be sued on a criminal offenses. That would be civil offense. People should remember that there are still defamation laws. When you falsely tarnish the reputation of a person in the Computer Code of Jurisdiction, you can still go to court, but it will be civil offense.
Many media stakeholders have called for the practical implementation of the law without manipulation to dilute the good intention so that journalists will show professionalism in deepening democracy and human rights in Liberia.
Evelyn Pade with that report. Well, it's a good development for the media at large in Liberia. We wish them the best. And with that, we come to the end of the show. On behalf of the production crew and my colleague here, I'm Isaac Mugabe.
I'm Assumpta Latos.
Bye for now. DW. Made for Minds.